Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show. Hello, everyone. It's me, Ray, and we are going to be covering a lot of different topics in the world of Grappling with Ray. We're going to be talking about all the different events that have been happening in the New England wrestling scene throughout the past couple months and a little bit into the future. We're also going to be talking the big WWE pay-per-view and the future of the UFC. And of course, I've teased in previous episodes, we are also going to be talking about my first ever show as a ring announcer. All right, let's get on with it. Over a year ago, Kofi Kingston had given Big E his blessing to pursue a singles run on SmackDown, while both Kofi and Xavier Woods were dealing with injuries. 3 months later, as a result of the 2020 WWE draft, Kofi and Xavier were drafted to Raw, while Big E was drafted to SmackDown. While the team embraced in a heartbreaking moment, they would reunite for small moments at major shows. While Kofi and Woods would continue tag team dominance, Big E would continue to entertain and gain momentum over time. While it may have been a slow burn to the point many were worried that he would never break the glass ceiling that separated him from Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, Big E would go on to win the Money in the Bank briefcase almost a year to the day when he received his friends' blessing. After dealing with a minor inconvenience and Corbin attempting to steal the briefcase, Big E would tease cashing in, no matter who the champion was. And indeed, he didn't care if he had to beat Roman, Lesnar, Randy Orton, or Bobby Lashley. He was dead set on becoming a world champion. And for the first time in 7 years, the WWE championship changed hands in the city of Boston, Massachusetts. For the first time in WWE history, the title went from one black man to another. Big E is in the history books, as is his counterpart, Bobby Lashley. And I do mean counterpart. Where in Big E, we see a man who isn't afraid to have fun as well as get serious. Lashley balks at the partying ways of his manager, MVP. Where Big E has always stood by and accepted his friends, Lashley has openly abused his former and current partners in the Hurt Business. But both men share similarities as well, as they are, as Big E would put it, big men with big muscles. Big man bumping meat. I'm excited to see what the future holds for Big E. It's easy to write off this accomplishment, as WWE clamoring to put the belt on a popular fresh face as they face heavy competition from AEW, or to simply say they wish to get rid of the MacGuffin of a briefcase before their draft and muddy the waters of the brand split. But they have to put the work in to test Big E along the way. Big E has actively stood for charities, movements, and been a positive role model for everyone. And to boot, he's exactly the kind of performer Vince McMahon is looking for. If I am left to project the length of his title reign, I can see him picking up where he left off and keeping the belt all the way to Survivor Series, where he will face the Universal Champion, be it Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar. But more on that situation in a bit. While we wait for the WWE to come back to the Northeast, we're going to take a look at how things have been going for one of my favorite New England promotions, Atlantic Pro Wrestling. It's been a while since I last covered them, so we have two events to run down for you. First, we had Super Summer Smash, held August 28th. I got to see this show with my partner and my father for my birthday, and it was one of the best presents I could have had. First, we saw Channing Thomas challenge Owen Brody for the APW New England title. Chang had been working his way up the ranks during his title shot and certainly put up quite the fight, but once again, with the timely help of Champagne Joe Moakley, Owen Brody retained the title. Next, we got to see two women return to action against one another. We have Sarah Teller taking on Widow Belmont. Sarah tried to put up a fight, but predictably and surprisingly to the crowd's enjoyment, Widow Belmont brutally destroyed her. Her and her manager would later declare that they don't care about the crowd's cheers, that one way or another, unless they receive the title shot they deserved, more little girls would be hurt. Next, we would see Danny Miles scheduled to face Nightbreed in a handicap match. However, when Nightbreed made their entrance, the other members of DDS minus Mortar, who had been suspended attacked and laid Gallo out, leading to what would be a singles match. Dynamite Danny would take advantage of a weakened Sepharan, though using his innate might. Sepharan had stayed in the match long enough for Gallo to come back. Working together, Nightbreed won the match and their future tag title match. When we returned from intermission, we got to see two young upstarts in the New England scene as Tyler Nitro fought Swilly O'Brien. Momentum was on Nitro's side, as his dynamic, hard-hitting moveset was enough to put away the heavy-handed fists of O'Brien. And Nitro also made a couple of kids' night when he let them borrow his leather vest at ringside. A stand-up individual can really stand out, especially when his opponent knows how to hit the mark in behaving as the scumbag heel. I thought it was the little things of this match that stood out to me and kept me invested throughout. Next was Vanity Vixen's rematch against Lil' Me and Kathleen for the APW Women's title. Before the show, there was some brief footage that showed maybe Joe Moakley's actions weren't simply born of obsession. Originally thought to be stalking Vixen for lustful desires, it was revealed that he and the other members of DDS had been attempting to recruit Lil' Me and Kathleen so as to ensure all of the gold of APW would belong to them. That trend continued in this match, as despite Vixen's fiery offense, she would once again be distracted by Joe's machinations, leading to LMK taking advantage. After the match, Vixen would call for Mike, the promoter, and tell him she wanted the match against Joe Moakley at Equilibrium. She stated she was willing to put her career on the line. Dynamite Danny Miles would come out and state that if she had her career on the line, Joe would agree to the match. Mike Gerard said that if she was wagering her career, then the Dynamite Death Squad would need to put something on the line as well. They had come to the agreement that if Vanity Vixen won the match, the Nightbreed would be allowed to choose the stipulation of their future title match. It was also revealed that that title match would take place at the 10th anniversary show. Before the main event, we saw H2O Ryan Waters face Bull James, formerly known as Bull Dempsey of NXT. Ryan was originally supposed to face Brian Malonez of Ring of Honor, but due to undisclosed complications, was replaced with the announcement coming a week before the event. Still, the booking team of APW made sure to follow an unwritten rule where if you have to cancel a match, replace it with something bigger. The former NXT star was very vocal as he and Ryan interacted with the crowd quite a bit before the match began, with Ryan receiving a ball of water before the match began and Bull receiving a beer at the end of it after he defeated Ryan Waters, possibly derailing Ryan's hopes for a future heavyweight title match. Speaking of the heavyweight title, newly crowned champion George Joel got to defend his title against the former champion Ilya Markopoulos. Great match, and Ilya continues to display his ability to play the crowd as he simply had to ask, "Who sucks now?" And the crowd in unison would say, "You do!" Jorah continues to put in the work as a champion, working just as hard as he does every time he's featured on AEW programming. After a great athletic battle, Ilya would attempt to use brass knuckles, but would fail, falling to the big boot and eating defeat. Jorah Joel would accept a gift from a fan, a flag representing his heritage and culture, India. We got to end the night watching one of the brightest futures in this business celebrate with the fans of this promotion. The next show, Equilibrium, took place on September 18th. While I was unfortunately unable to attend, I have to give a big shout out to one of my friends for giving me all of the updates on what was an amazing show. You know who you are. There was plenty of work done to hype up the 10th anniversary special, which is coming October 16th. For Equilibrium, we opened the show with Ilya Markopoulos coming out, claiming that any woes hitting APW are because he is no longer champion. Being fed up with the disrespect and the fact that he wasn't even booked on tonight's show, Ilya promised he wasn't going to leave until he received a title match. Mike Gerard came out and made a wager with Ilya. He told Ilya that he would be added to the title match that was already scheduled between George Joel and Nico Silva, but if Ilya lost the match, he would be fired. Ilya begrudgingly agreed to the terms and left the ring so the show could continue as scheduled. First, we got to see Tyler Nitro take on Armani Chaos, a replacement for Brandino Davis. Much love and positive vibes go out to Brandino recently, as it was announced that he has been suffering from kidney failure. I've gotten to see Brandino perform for Impulse Pro Wrestling and Limitless Wrestling, and he is a great performer. While I would have loved to see what sort of magic he could make with Tyler Nitro, I wish a speedy and healthy recovery to him. Back to the match, Tyler would pull out the victory after a major super kick planted Armani Chaos down for the count. I'll find it interesting to see if Armani's going to come back to APW with his normal tag team partner Paris Van Dale in tow in the future. In the meantime, with 3 victories in a row for Tyler Nitro, a future title opportunity may be in his future. I say maybe, but literally, like, before I started recording this, APW actually announced that that Owen Brody will be defending the title against Tyler Nitro. More on that in a bit, though. Vanity Vixen would get her match against Joe Moakley. Taking her time to get the proper payback, there was never a doubt in my mind that she would win, and when she did, Vixen ensured that she would still be around for APW's 10th anniversary, and frankly, got payback for Joe, costing her the APW Women's title. Channing Thomas would have a never shot Owen Brody's New England title, this time without the interference of Joe Moakley and with the added stipulation that the only way to win was by submission. It seemed like Channing Thomas had the win in the bag when he locked in the sharpshooter, but Owen managed to rake the natural's eyes, leaving him applying a sharpshooter of his own. The pain was too much for Channing Thomas as he would tap out. Despite the eye rake, this would be one of the most legitimate title matches of Owen Brody's reign, displaying his fortitude and ring IQ, even if his cunning comes in the form of illegal maneuvers from time to time. While Vanity Vixen didn't retire, we did get to see someone's final match. Major New England indie wrestling legend and teacher at New England Pro Wrestling Academy, Johnny Vegas, would have his last match against Seth Aran of Nightbreed. After pulling off the victory, Johnny was treated to a video package of all the young athletes he had helped during his time as a professional wrestler and a trainer, including NXT Young Gun and former Limitless Wrestling heavyweight champion Carmelo Hayes. Little Mean Kathleen faced a new test when she defended her APW Women's title against the leader of the Scrunchy Squad, Becca. Becca is known both as the leader of the Scrunchy Squad and as a hot up-and-coming competitor in the New England scene, having recently competed in the Vacationland Cup for Limitless Wrestling. Becca put up quite a fight and was very close to winning the title until Owen Brody and Danny Miles came out to distract the ref, while Mortar, returning from his suspension to defend the tag titles later in the night, would give an F5 to Becca and drag LMK's unconscious body on top of her. The ref would turn around and count the pin, leading to Little Mean Kathleen retaining the title and cementing her alliance with Dynamite Death Squad. After the match, Widow Belmont would attack Becca, angry at being left off the card. Mike Gerard came out and reminded everyone that the 10th anniversary show has a Gil Bonk Wrestle Royale booked, with all of the women of APW competing for the women's title. While Little Mean Kathleen would have the champion's advantage and enter the match last, due to Widow Belmont's actions, she will be one of two competitors to start the match. Continuing a string of losses, Swilly O'Brien would lose to veteran H2O Ryan Waters after a match I could only describe as a brawl based off the photographs I had seen from social media. Waves and Curls, a New England team that received some exposure in AEW Dark, challenged Dynamite Death Squad for the tag team titles. Despite their immense talent and tag team synergy, Waves and Curls fell to the dominating offense of Danny Miles and Mortar. Though after the match, it was revealed that Nightbreed had decided what the stipulation would be for their title match. They would challenge Dynamite Death Squad for the tag team titles once again, but this time in a coffin match. I'm curious how APW is going to pull a match like this off inside the Newburyport Elks Lodge. That is assuming I can get around my own schedule and get to see some of the best wrestling in Massachusetts. Oh, and to add insult to injury, Joe Moakley was announced as the starting entrance for the men's Big Woody Wrestle Royale. And finally, the main event. Two former tag team partners scheduled to face each other for the heavyweight title, and one former champion who put his contract on the line. I was told it was a hard-hitting contest of amazing power moves from all competitors involved. As it was described, Jorah managed to hit his big boot on Nico Silva when Ilya Markopoulos came from behind, launched Jorah into the ring post, and pinned Nico to regain the heavyweight title, making him a two-time champion and sucking the air out of the APW faithful. This is all going to build to their major event, APW Decade. At this time, front row seats are sold out, with second row seats available for $20 and general admission listed at $15. We're talking two separate Wrestle Royales, a coffin match, the New England title match, and much, much more. That's October 16th, Newburyport Elks Lodge in Massachusetts. All right, guys, I'm going to be talking about my time as an Impulse Pro Wrestling ring announcer, discussing UFC title matches, and more. Just give us a moment to hear word from our sponsors. All right, guys, let's talk about a show where I got to be part of the production. I got to make my live debut as a ring announcer for Impulse Pro Wrestling at Windsor, Vermont's Autumn Moon Festival. This was an amazing six-match card held in an outdoor venue. Getting to be in the thick of it, I can assure you the crowd was absolutely wild with passion and excitement for the performers. The opening match saw the former Impulse heavyweight champion Blade Bandit returning to the promotion with a new attitude. With Jesse Nolan at his side, he went into action against Alexander Lee, one tough son of a bitch coming from Bangor, Maine. With some hard-hitting action with plenty of interference on Jesse Nolan's part, Alexander Lee pulled out the victory. After suffering multiple taunts in the crowd telling him to go back to Canada, I do recall one older gentleman yelling out, "Go back to Canada, you mother canucker." Blade Bandit declared he was never coming back. How long he holds true to that promise is unclear. Next, we have the Impulse debut of Love Doug. A side note real quick. In all the time I've known of Love Doug, it wasn't until my mom messed up his name that I realized the wordplay with Love Dove. Thought that was interesting. Love Doug took on the Syndicate's B.A. Tatum. There were a number of highlights to this match, one of the most exciting coming when Tatum retreated to ringside with his partner Owen Brody, only for Love Doug to hit them both with a suicide dive. I do remember this because I sort of had to double as security because there was a lot of people like crowding the ring. So me and a never gentleman on security had to like back everyone up, and then both of us almost got hit with a suicide dive as well. It's live, folks. Anything can happen. It was high risk, no reward, however, as Love Doug would later be distracted by Obros' interference and turn into a spine buster from the last Street Fighter, leading to B.A. Tatum walking away the victor. Next up was Kirby Wackerman taking on the powerhouse brute known as Mortar. This was the first time Mortar has appeared at Impulse since his attitude and name change. While some of the Impulse faithful were shocked, my main emotion was fear at having to share the ring with this beast as he stalked around me, demanded the microphone, and ordered me to hold his headgear. Trust me, guys, you don't want to get into a fight with this man. He asked for that mic, I gave it to him. Kirby isn't just any ordinary man, though. Coming equipped with a hard head straight out of the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant, it was almost as if Kirby was the one made of brick and mortar. Anytime Mortar would actually punch Kirby in the head, he would retreat in pain. It was this display of hard-headed endurance that brought Kirby the victory, and you can bet I hung on to that headgear until Mortar was ready to take it back. Halfway through the show, and we see the Syndicate in action again, this time with Owen Brody taking on Manchester's favorite son, Tyler Nitro. These two managed to pull in a terrific match, both displaying their hard-hitting style and adaptability to the up-close outdoor environment. B.A. Tatum would try to distract Nitro, but Love Doug would return. After Doug and Tatum brawled to the back, and a second official came out to replace the one that was hurt, we saw a superkick swinging neckbreaker combination that led to Tyler Nitro pulling off the victory. With this being the first time these two have ever competed against one another, could this be a preview of what's to come at APW's 10th anniversary special? Could Tyler Nitro become a New England champion? Or can Owen Brody tie the score at one apiece across promotions and state lines? These are the kinds of stories that makes New England wrestling so strong. Next, we have two more debuts for Impulse. We get to see Shannon Lavenge take on Becca. Though Shannon would attempt to leave the ring, declaring that this was beneath her, Becca would bring her right back in. Having been spurned by Shannon's refusal to join the Scrunchy Squad, the two women enjoyed a contest of technical ability, bringing the fans to their feet despite the late hour. Becca would walk away the victor, but not before adding a few fans to see her Scrunchy Squad. And finally, the main event. Masshole Mike McCarthy, a veteran of 20 years in the business, defended his heavyweight title against Alec Price. Many in the New England scene have cited that despite the arrogance and hard-to-like attitude of the Prize City OG, Alec Price has shown the capability to be a contender and champion, most notable his challenge for the Limitless heavyweight title this past July. I got to announce prior to the match's start that it would be no disqualifications and no countouts. Both men took advantage of this as Mike and Alec would brawl to the outside of a ring. They would even take their fight to the opposite side of a street. Alec Price would tell a young girl to get out of the dunk tank, which would prove to be his undoing as Mike McCarthy would fight out of Alex's grip and leave him stunned in the dunk tank seat. With Mike's encouragement, a young fan got the honor of dunking the prize. While this was happening, I got to double S security and managed to get quite the splash myself. Thank goodness the autumn weather was just a bit warmer this night. When the action returned to the ring, it looked like Alec was so incensed that he clicked into another gear, hitting the masshole with all the fury he had. But this rage blinded him as Mike was able to trap him in a crossface. While Alec would attempt to roll Mike up, Mike kept the crossface going and would force Alec to tap out, leading to my declaration, and still! While there's no word on the time and place for the next Impulse show, the Windsor crowd is red hot and some of the talents seem to look forward to coming back. So whether I'm working or holding a ticket, you can expect to see me there. All right, guys. There were so many memories from that night. I loved every moment of it, and I'm so excited to say that I can actually be able to say that I'm a ring announcer. I can't believe it. I want to say I never thought it would happen, but that would mean be ignoring the fact that I've literally imagined myself doing this among other aspects of the business since I was a kid. This meant a lot to me. So thank you. Big shout out to everyone that was a part of that show. Production wise, talent wise, everyone there was on the top of their game. It was an absolute blast. But we're gonna take a break from pro wrestling real quick. It's been a while since I've covered the UFC. I'm gonna take this time to briefly look at the remaining title matches that are booked for the rest of the year 2021. This, of course, assuming there are no complications with injury, COVID, or weight cutting that has plagued many fights in the past. In October, we have two title matches scheduled. In the bantamweight division, Aljamain Sterling has his first title defense in a rematch with Petr Yan, this coming off their original fight earlier this year. The first time in UFC history where a title changed hands on a disqualification. Now in the world of professional wrestling, a title change wouldn't happen under these circumstances, but this is the UFC and they make the rules. While I certainly believe Petr Yan should have been stripped of the title, I don't believe Sterling is fully deserving of the belt, as in my opinion, he was already in the losing end of that contest 4 rounds in. Now we get the rematch, and as long as Yan can manage to not kill his opponent with another illegal knee, I see Yan taking his belt back. As for Sterling, a victory here is the only way to change my mind about whether or not he is truly a champion. I don't see it happening. Among the many variables at play, he's sure to be gun-shy, as this is the first match after receiving a major concussion that had him hospitalized, and it's against the very same man that did this to him. Whether it be gun-shy or blind rage, I see an early knockout finish for Yan, early as round one even. The main event of that fight card is going to see Jan Błachowicz defend his light heavyweight title for the second time. After defeating Israel Adesanya, he returns to fighting the actual contenders of his weight class, starting with Glover Teixeira. This is going to be Glover's first shot at the title in over 7 years. His last attempt saw him lose by decision after going a full 5 rounds with John Jones. Teixeira has grown as a fighter in that time, however, with all of his last 5 fights being won by finish. Teixeira has a good chin in him, as is standard with a striker of his style. However, you can't deny Jan Błachowicz's chin combined with his takedown rate. I see this going similarly to both men's most recent title fights. A unanimous decision in favor of the champion. That's right, I'm saying Jan Błachowicz and Glover Teixeira are going to go the distance, a full 25 minutes, with Jan pulling out the scorecards. In November, we have two more title fights. First, Rose Namajunas defends her strawweight title for the first time in her second reign against the woman she defeated for the belt, Zhang Weili. This comes off of what Zhang called an early stoppage, though no one seemed to agree with her. Zhang, however, did have an illustrious, though short-lived reign, having been the first Chinese woman to win a UFC title as well as putting on 2020's match of the year, and a unanimous decision victory over Joanna Trdejic. While Zhang has a history of determination and skill, Rose Namajunas aims to live her mantra of being the best. I can't doubt Thug Rose again. Last time, it was a first-round knockout. This time, I'm going to say it goes the distance. Zhang's not going to allow a stoppage. It will be close. Maybe even a split decision. But I'm giving the nod to Thug Rose and still. The main event for November in Madison Square Garden will see Kamaru Usman defending the welterweight title for the 4th time overall, 2nd time against Colby Covington. In their last encounter in December of 2019, Usman defeated Covington with a very late 5th round TKO. Since then, Covington has only added one victory to his record, and that being against a Tyron Woodley, who is halfway out the door with multiple losses mounting on his record. I mean, for real, a Woodley literally lost to a Paul recently. I can't take him seriously as anymore. I'm sorry, dude. I personally don't believe Covington should have received this title shot, and it should have gone to Leon Edwards. Top contender, a man who's been on a winning streak for a long time now. That streak, more than one, unlike Covington. And he's kept that streak alive against top-tier talent. I'll give this fight to Usman, as right now, Leon's the only man on my radar who has a chance of stopping him. Maybe McGregor if he decides he likes fighting at welterweight. Though with a 2-fight skid, he's not in the best position to be demanding title shots. My verdict will be Usman with a finish as early as round 3. For the UFC's final pay-per-view event of the year, it looks like they're trying to nail a 3rd title match, as neither of the 2 they already confirmed have been slated for the main event. For the 2 that have been announced, we've got Brandon Moreno defending the flyweight title for the first time against the man he defeated for it, Davison Figueiredo. Over the course of a full year, these men will have fought each other 3 times. First to a majority draw in December of last year, then Moreno defeated Figueiredo by 3rd round submission to win the title this past June. Now on the eve of the 1-year mark, they will go to war once again. Brandon Moreno has stated he has no intentions of losing this belt, and he carries the weight of being the only Mexican champion of the UFC with pride. I see this going to a decision once again, but this time, instead of a draw or point deductions, we'll see Moreno retain the belt by split decision and give an impassioned speech, hopefully calling for a UFC event to be held south of the border. Slated for the co-main event is Amanda Nunes defending the bantamweight title against Juliana Peña. This will be Amanda's 6th defense of the title, not counting her 2 successful defenses of the featherweight title. The biggest issue with this match is Juliana Peña is not a real threat to the title. There is no threat to the GOAT that is Amanda Nunes. This woman could retire as a legitimate champ, and no one would question it. Nunes wins by second round submission, I'll say. All right, back to the New England wrestling scene. There is a new wrestling promotion coming to New England June 30th of this year. Rip Bison and Del... Oh my god, I misspelled Delmi's name pretty bad. Delmiexo is her real name. Rip Bison and Delmiexo had announced that they have purchased a wrestling ring with the intention of host shows under a new promotional banner, taking on the name of Pro Wrestling Grind. They mentioned that they see their promotion as being influenced and inspired by the Japanese strong style. After a string of interviews, they announced that their debut show titled Who Made Who would take place October 22nd at the Pulaski Club in East Hampton, Massachusetts. See their social medias for ticket sales. But when I say theirs, I don't mean Bison and XO socials. I mean, you check those out too. They're great performers. But check out the actual social media for Pro Wrestling Grind. That's where the ticket sale information is. At this time, we have four matches confirmed for the show, with Kevin Koo taking on Matt Mikowski, Logan Black versus Merck, Perry Von Vicious versus Brandon Watts, who will be accompanied by his partner, Randy Summers, and the most recently announced match is Davian versus Becca. This is already a good lineup with plenty of ever talent announced, such as Rip Bison himself, tag team The Main Event, and Alec Price, among others. Another event I would love to go to, and I highly suggest you give it a shot, as there is only one first ever show. All right, now we come to Extreme Rules. A show so extreme, I was lulled to sleep. Granted, my own terrible work-life balance may have had a hand in that, but I can't be the only one who misses the days when Extreme Rules was a show where every match had a stipulation of some sort. But instead, we were treated to multiple basic matches. I'm pretty sure they didn't even announce that any of these matches has had a stipulation, and they just tacked on the Extreme Rules stipulation to the main event at the last minute. So, in addition to discussing the result of the show, I am going to don my Booker's cap in my hindsight 2020 glasses and tell you how I would have booked the Extreme Rules matches. First, we have the kickoff match belonging to Liv Morgan versus Carmella. Liv Morgan would come out on top on this one. This match, I would actually leave alone. The kickoff, while a great way to whet the audience's appetite, is the best spot on the card to have a generic singles match, and that's exactly what this story deserved. If we were closer to the end of the Lynch-Belair story, I'd say maybe book it as a number one contenders match, but that particular story seems like it has plenty more in it. Also during the kickoff, we got to see a brawl break out between the New Day and the alliance of Bobby Lashley, AJ Styles, and Omos. This would lead to a standard six-man tag team match to open the show, where the New Day came out victorious, specifically with Big E getting the pin on Lashley. I would have liked to keep the energy of the brawl by making this match a tornado tag match, where there are no tags needed, but the pinfall would still need to happen in the ring. While I understand and respect that Big E needs to be protected and solidified as the WWE Champion, I would have liked to see Lashley come out on top, after decimating Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, while Styles and Omos held E back. This would build Lashley back up as a monster heel, add some vitriol to the fire in this feud, and give us an even bigger match to look forward to on Monday. As I'm recording this before Monday Night Raw airs, it may prove to not need that fire, but regardless, it could have also set up Woods and Kingston to be inserted into the tag title picture, maybe as a triple threat tag match at Crown Jewel. The Usos defended the SmackDown tag titles against the Street Profits. If there was one way to build off of what was already a terrific match, it would be to add ladders to the mix. All four of these men could literally and figuratively reach new heights with the creative offense they could pull off. We could keep the same result, Usos retaining, and fans would still leave happy after seeing amazing feats of athleticism, in particular the already heavenly high jump of Montez Ford. The next singles match we saw, we got to see Charlotte Flair retain the title over Alexa Bliss. I'd say this match could have had the Extreme Rules stipulation instead. We could have seen Charlotte swing a chair or kendo stick with a bandit, or seen some involvement from Lily. The outcome still works because we're not sure if this is WWE's way of killing the Lily character for good, or simply booking the further escalation of Alexa's insanity. Then we have the triple threat. I understand the goal here is to build Damian Priest's momentum, continue to establish him as a top-tier competitor against both heels and babyfaces. So why not make this an elimination match, where Priest is able to pin both men involved in the match, those men being Sheamus and Jeff Hardy in this case. The number of people available to run programs with Priest is long enough already, and that's before the draft. A never good match from three charismatic performers, I look forward to seeing who Priest works with after this. With two matches left, this next one is the one I had the biggest change to. In reality, we saw Becky Lynch versus Bianca Belair end in a no contest after Sasha Banks attacked both of them and laid them out. This comes after a great match that Lynch and Belair survive each other's offense and avoid each other's finishes. With the original finish in mind, I'd have liked to have seen this as a last man standing match. Think about it. The offense would be more violent. We'd see more creative spots from the competitors. It'd be a spotlight on how tough both women are, and we can keep a finish and leave the fans with the idea that Sasha Banks is the true last woman standing. Add in weeks of Lynch and Banks trying to force Bianca out of the picture, maybe even with a one-on-one match between Banks and Lynch at Crown Jewel, and we have a stellar main event triple threat match in the future that could see Bianca win the title after being seen as an underdog competing against two women that lit the division up for years. And finally, the Extreme Rules match between Roman Reigns and Demon Finn Balor. Upon catching a replay, I'd say this was a decent match. The Usos' interference worked, the Never Say Die determination from both men was spot on. The thing I didn't like was the top rope snapping. Also, the red lights. I mean, who cares about the red lights? Okay, look, the top rope snapping was a dangerous spot. I was very concerned with when Finn clutched his leg. He appears to be okay, simply selling, but regardless, there was a better way to pull off a finish like this. Without the red lights, that didn't do the Fiend any favors, and certainly isn't doing Balor any favors either. Without the top rope snapping and putting one of your top stars at risk. Without Finn even having to take a pin. Make this match a steel cage match. There are still creative ways to get the Usos involved. We don't have to see Roman don a mask, justify Balor through the crowd. I mean, I appreciate that we're reminding people that there is still a pandemic happening, but Roman Reigns is immunocompromised. Was putting him at risk by putting him through a crowd full of people who aren't wearing masks, like, really? Was that really a risk worth taking? Again, you're putting your top guys at risk here, guys. And we can see Roman spear Balor through the cage wall, which, yes, is much more safe than a fucking rope snapping. Roman spears him, rolls over, lands on the floor, and we have a winner. Balor isn't pinned in his demon persona, and Roman leaves looking strong. Steel cage matches are hard to book as main events at times. I get that. The crowd's hot for the gimmick, but they get annoyed that visibility is lowered. So maybe placement on the cards has to be swapped. I'd say the last three matches were US title, SmackDown Women's title, and the Universal title. Let's swap that around a bit. Put the Universal title as third to last, put the US title as second to last, and then put the last man standing version of SmackDown Women's title on last. That's how it works, and that's how the ideal way to close the show is in my mind. But what do you guys think? Did you enjoy Extreme Rules? Feel free to discuss on our Facebook page or on our website. That's www.73dreamstudiosvarietyshow.wordpress.com. All right, guys. Next week, we'll be doing a gaming gab on what? I'm not yet sure. Maybe Returnal? Maybe Hot Wheels Unleashed? Maybe something else entirely? If you're looking forward to New England Wrestling, we have a lot of shows coming up. We got Limitless Wrestling hosting Dancing on Thin Ice up in Herman, Maine. They recently crowned a new heavyweight champion in Anthony Green, formerly WWE's August Gray, for those outside of the New England scene who may not know him. That event is coming October 15th. The next day, however, October 16th, I've said it before, Atlantic Pro Wrestling, hosting their 10th anniversary show in Newburyport, Massachusetts, with two Battle Royals, a coffin match, and much more lined up. Also mentioned earlier, we have Pro Wrestling Grind's debut show, Who Made Who, coming October 22nd in East Hampton, Mass. And the only show I'm guaranteed to go to, I'll be seeing my first ever AEW Dynamite when they come to Boston, Massachusetts on October 27th. A lot to look forward to. You can be sure I'll have a grappling array covering my time there. If you guys want to hear more about all of these epic shows, feel free to hit the link in the description and donate whatever you can at my anchor.fm support page. Follow Clark Dion on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to check out some pictures of me as a ring announcer. Follow 73 Dream Studios on Facebook as I managed to connect the RSS feed to our page, so you should be getting notified whenever we drop new episodes. And follow me on Twitch as rdog20 to see me play some NBA, Avengers, Aliens, and more. Much love to you all, and I'm very excited that indie wrestling is only growing stronger.